This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Brian Wheeler joins us live in studio. He is the executive director of Charlottesville Tomorrow, online at cvilletomorrow.org. And you weren't here last week because you were... It was election day, right?
It was election day.
Oh, and I was sick.
And you were sick.
Oh, man, I was so sick. I didn't have the flu, but I had, I don't know what it was, just a terrible cough and congestion, and it felt like strep, you know, where it hurts to swallow. But I had all the tests, and they said, you don't have flu, you don't have strep, you just got a nasty bug.
Sounded like the crew at WINA did a bang-up job covering the election.
I listened to every minute of it. They did do a fantastic job. Where were you that night?
I was at home. I went home and watched the results come in.
And listened.
Thank
you.
A little static challenged out in my part of Ivy.
But, oh, you know what?
Because the antenna cuts back at a certain time of
night. It's that, and a lot of people still call and email about that. Hey, I'm listening to WINA, and then all of a sudden I can't hear it. It's by law, it automatically powers down to some night pattern. That's what we call it in the radio business, night pattern. And the actual antenna direction and power, everything changes. And it you can only really hear it if you're around the city, and it's probably already switched over by now because it switches over. It's supposed to switch over at nightfall, but it does it in the winter. It does it like 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
But in today's world of technology and information and audio and video being everywhere, that's a little hard for me to understand, Coy.
That's a law from like the 1930s. It's the Clear Channel law, and so we have to power down so that you can hear 1070 out of Indianapolis.
Well,
is some sports channel.
If anyone's listening who can do anything about this crazy situation, it'd be
good
for
luck.
It'd be good for the community if WINA could broadcast at full power throughout the entire county.
It's such an old
24/7.
Such an old dumb thing that the people who benefit from it just keep it there. But it's back when you had these clear channel stations, and it was because in case of a nuclear attack, you had to have radio stations that could reach everybody, and they were the real powerful ones. So they chose them and said, everybody else has to get out of their way at night so they can broadcast. It's crazy. Yeah, I don't get it.
Whoever can hear us right now, we're glad you're listening.
Definitely. So let's talk about those elections.
You know, it was in January when we did our top 10 show, top 10 stories of 2008. I predicted what would be top stories of 2009, and I wasn't sure if I put the elections on that list, but I just went back and checked, and fortunately I did, because it is one of the biggest stories of the year.
Absolutely. It's especially in the county.
In the county in particular.
Because we're going to have a new board.
Right. We will have two new members on the board, and Dwayne Snow and Rodney Thomas. Of course, Dennis Rooker was reelected. He was unopposed. And in Albemarle County, three of the six seats are up for election every 2 years. So the three seats were the Rio District, the Samuel Miller District. For the first time in 16 years, that one was on the ballot because Sally Thomas has held that seat. She ran a write-in contest and won, which was unprecedented in Virginia for her to win in a write-in campaign.
Really? In the whole state?
Well, I don't know if it's the only one in the whole state, but it's one of the few that ever gets cited as a successful writing campaign.
Wow.
And then we had the Jack Jewett district with Mr. Rooker.
Yeah.
So it is very interesting.
So two conservatives, for all intents and purposes, replaced two liberals. I mean, two left of centers, Slutsky and Thomas. They are going out, and their seats will be replaced by two conservatives on the board, which is going to really shake things up in the county.
And Sally Thomas always ran as an independent. David Slutsky was running as a Democrat, but the two candidates that were victorious in those races were both Republicans. It is going to shake things up. We did a story on Sunday related to the impact on things like budgeting, taxes, economic development. Those things will all shape the growth and development agenda in the county next year and for years thereafter. So we gave some attention to that because I think it's significant what the candidates said when they were on the campaign trail, what they're talking about right now, and also what they're going to be faced with as far as new challenges go when it comes to the economy.
Because it's going to hit local governments really hard.
It is, and the state revenues are expected to shrink dramatically. The composite index is going to be recalculated. That's the formula that determines what Albemarle County receives from the state. It's based on your ability to pay. Albemarle County is viewed as a higher wealth locality, so it's viewed as having a higher ability to pay for its own services.
Which means you'll get less from Richmond.
Which today means we get less from Richmond than other localities who are less fortunate. As the thing to keep in mind on this, as you hear about this over the next week, is the composite index is calculated on a whole host of things, but one of those is property values. But it's a two-year lag on the property values. So we have to think about what Albemarle County's property was doing 2 years ago versus what it's doing right now. And right now it's going down. And that's why at the local level, the funding picture will be challenging.
Yeah.
Because the real estate property tax is the main source for funding for Albemarle County.
Oh, boy.
So anyway, those are some of the things they're going to be facing. We called up a few people to get their insights about it. Jack Marshall, somebody you've had on the show, he's the president of Advocates for a Sustainable Albemarle Population, or ASAP. And, you know, I knew he'd have something interesting to say. So Jack said, quote, in the last 20 years, there's been a natural tension on the board between those that subscribe to a strategy of constant growth is good and we need to attract new businesses versus what Mr. Marshall says is a new strategy. A community should seek a sustainable level of economic development that doesn't disrupt our environment and quality of life. And Jack Marshall said at the end, quote, last week's election pretty clearly shifted the balance towards a more pro-growth approach. And so I think that's one of the things to keep an eye on, and that certainly Charlottesville Tomorrow will be keeping an eye on. And people often ask, you know, what's our philosophy about growth? And I always describe it as quality. You know, this is a community that's going to grow. And most people don't disagree with that suggestion. And so if we are going to grow, Charlottesville Tomorrow, one of the reasons we came together in 2005 was to help people understand what quality growth might look like, yeah. Help get the conversation going around.
How they can participate in that process as citizens.
Participate in the process. Yeah. And these are the different choices in front of us as a community. And so some of the choices in front of us, one of the first will be the approach to this next budget. And these two candidates, Mr. Thomas, Mr. Snow, both talked about zero-based budgeting.
Explain that, will you? Because we've heard that a lot, and I'm sure there's a lot of people who don't even know what that is. But they both ran on that idea, and they're both going to be at the table to build the new budget for Albemarle County, and they're taking to the table this idea of zero-based budgeting.
I asked Supervisor Ken Boyd, who was not on the ballot this round, but I asked Ken Boyd to explain it to me. And Mr. Boyd said that basically, instead of staff coming with their recommendations based on last year's budget, sort of that as a starting point, and then are there any new initiatives that you want to budget, and you sort of add that to last year's budget. That's been more or less the traditional approach.
That's how government works. Now, we spent this last year, so we obviously need that plus some new stuff.
Now,
therefore, they're encouraged to spend every cent they get because they need to go back and, you know, justify that number.
One way to look at it. Now, if you ask any county executive or city manager, they would say, we look at every line item and make sure it still needs to be there. So they would say they are looking carefully and they're not just assuming what they had in the past.
Yeah.
But certainly the other point of view is they're always assuming they can just get more. And as tax property values have gone up and taxes have gone up that have been collected,
that money's been there. Yeah.
That money's been there. And now it's not. So the county learned last week they're going to have a $5.7 million deficit in the current fiscal year.
God.
That's the year we're in right now that started only in July.
So they've already
figured out they're $5.7 million in the hole. But back to zero-based budgeting, Mr. Boyd said what you do is you have department heads come and build their budget from scratch.
And so you start at zero.
Start at zero. Hence the name.
Yeah.
And department heads have to build it from scratch and then come in front of the board and justify everything that they're doing, basically, so that the board, in the minds of these candidates and Mr. Boyd, are looking at each line item and saying, does that make sense? And Mr. Boyd described it as some of that decision making coming up from the county executive's office to the board,
yeah,
where they are looking at a line item budget and deciding what comes and goes.
Which, now, in this kind of economy, maybe you do need that kind of thinking. Maybe you do need the board going line by line instead of, you know, just taking the number that comes from the staff.
And, of course, you know, another approach, Coy, is to say, well, we're only willing to raise this much in revenues. We know we're facing declines from the state. And so here's sort of our target, and challenge staff then to make their best recommendations about how to run the government on the resources that would be available.
Yeah.
So there are different ways. You can either put the ball in staff's court to bring their best projections and their best information about what is really needed for government to function. And you'll hear a lot of talk over the next few months about critical services. What are those critical services we need to fund?
Yeah. What do we have to do?
Public safety, education will often be linked together in that conversation. And so, you know, Jeff Werner, who's a constant observer at these meetings, he's with the Piedmont Environmental Council. Jeff said that this zero-based budgeting was, in his mind, going to force some tough choices, choices that had never had to have been made by the supervisors. So Mr. Boyd also cautioned that this was something he would only want to do to one to two departments at a time, not all of county government at once. So we'll see that fleshed out, I imagine.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. How does it work with the school budget? And of course, you're on the school board, chair of the school board, but how does the budget work? Did the county, if they do this zero-based budgeting, they wouldn't do that to the school board, would they?
Well,
isn't that a separate budget?
It is a separate budget. What local governments have authority for under the Virginia Constitution is sort of they could, if they wanted, they could say, we'll give you so much money for transportation, we'll give you so much money for personnel. Sort of in big buckets, they could designate how much money was available. That doesn't happen here locally, and I don't know that that happens anywhere in Virginia. But the point is, their authority is sort of limited to big chunks.
Right.
And not micromanaging a school division, because there's another elected body that's supposed to be watching that and building its own
budget. That's a separately elected group. Yeah.
But at the same time, school boards in Virginia don't have taxing authority like they do in other localities. So we have this sort of, you know, we have this dance between the members of the school board and the members of the Board of Supervisors who have to work together at the end of the day. And I'm happy to say that the boards in this community do work very well together. But it requires us to be able to justify our budget and say, you know, we've done our homework. So you ask, how does it work? It starts with the school board and the Board of Supervisors getting information about compensation. That's in October. So really in October is the first meeting for a budget that's not going to be approved until really April. So the meeting started in October.
So we're into it now.
We're into it now. And the compensation is looking at our competitive market. And you know, local government is a big employer in this community, probably second to the University of Virginia as far as number of employees. So it's big business, and that requires us to look carefully at compensation issues. Then we'll get into the capital budgeting. What the Board of Supervisors were told last week is that they need to change their thinking about their capital budget, that basically over the next 5 years, there will be no money for any new construction, period. There will only be money for maintenance efforts that need to happen and for debt service. So that's a big change. And they'd been looking at
projects. Because they had a whole bunch of projects they wanted to do.
Well, and some of those projects are related to master plans, like the Crozet Master Plan, and capital improvements like the Crozet Library.
So we're not going to see that anytime soon.
All of those things are going to be pushed out into future years until there's money expected to be available.
Yeah.
That was the advice of staff to the Board of Supervisors last week. That's also a joint school, local government process. And, you know, what's going to be interesting, Coy, is Dr. Moran, the superintendent of the school board, of the school division, is going to have to release her budget right about the time the governor, Tim Kaine, is releasing his budget for the state. So our process as a school division is very early, right there with the governor in December, saying, here's what we expect to need next year for the year that doesn't start till July. All of it means there's a whole lot of change between December and when the final budget is approved.
Yeah. And there's also a lot of change between those December numbers and, you know, when the new governments and the newly elected people are sworn in January. Then it changes again because you have new decision makers at the table.
That's right. And The school board will be having work sessions in January, February, and public hearings and approving its funding request. That's sort of the next step on the school side. And it gets phrased as a funding request at that point because it's not a final budget. It's a request from the school board, as I said, to the Board of Supervisors saying, here's what we think the schools need. The Board of Supervisors and Bob Tucker, the county executive, have to take that in as one input for their overall budget for the whole county. And so then they focus on things like public safety, social services, the capital budget, and bring all those things to the table.
Yeah. What is the budget for Albemarle County?
Oh, gosh, off the top of my head, I want to say $250 million.
Wow.
I may be wrong about that, but that's my...
And we're already way off for this year. Goodness.
Yeah.
So when do they have all those big public hearings where the county office building fills up with people?
Those will be in March and April.
And then they finally get to a rate and a budget in the spring.
So the tax rate's another interesting thing. And for we think four of the supervisors that will be there in January are already saying they're opposed to any increase in the real estate property tax rate. That's significant because county staff have come forward and said we need an increase to sort of level fund.
I bet they have.
But an increase to get back to the point of being what they call, I guess they're calling taxpayer neutral. The taxes you paid last year, Coy, would be about the same on average that you pay this year. And so they're trying to get to that because your property value has gone down. They're trying to bring the rate back up to equalize that so that they get a consistent amount of revenue.
That's
going to
be a super hard sell with this new board.
It will. And like I said, four of them have already said they are not too keen about that idea.
Yeah.
Now, Ken Boyd's been around the block on this. He on the school board and on the Board of Supervisors. And, you know, he couched it and said, you know, until we have to sacrifice, quote, critical services, he would not be willing to raise that rate. But I tell you.
And new construction, a new library, that's not critical services.
Well, that's not, but public safety and other things many in the community view as critical.
Yeah.
So getting fire trucks and ambulances to the right place at the right time or police cars are viewed as critical. And we need to think carefully about those decisions and what impact.
Meanwhile, the city's not having this problem.
Well, you know,
they got big vats of money. They're rolling around in it. Rubbing it in their armpits.
They do seem somewhat insulated from this, in part because of the revenue sharing that they receive from Albemarle County. It'll be about $18 million. You know, economic development is another part of this. And just real quick on that, Coy, I think these new leaders on the Board of Supervisors are saying they want the message to be we're open for business. And part of the challenge in our revenue situation is diversifying where the revenue is coming from. A community that relies heavily on the real estate property tax is, you know, has to deal with the fact that property values go up and down. They want to have more business in the county to create sales tax revenues and other sources.
So that can contribute more significantly to the overall budget rather than just property taxes.
So I think that economic development equation and how friendly we're being to help new businesses both relocate here and help businesses grow here in the community are going to all be key factors in the next several months.
It's going to be fun to watch. I love this stuff. We're talking with Brian Wheeler, the executive director of Charlottesville Tomorrow. It's time for a break. We're going to take a break here for just a few minutes, local news and weather. We'll continue this conversation when we get back, and Brian will talk about what do we have coming up. The very latest on the new neighborhood that's coming in up near Woodbrook. We've got something about an overpass at Hydraulic, perhaps?
That was the road flying over the Kroger. We'll give you an update on that. And also an energy audit program that the city and county have gotten a grant on. We'll update you on that.
There you go. All of that coming up in just a few minutes. Sit tight. We'll be back with you. This is Charlottesville right now. If you're big star bound, let me warn you, it's a long, hard ride. It's 41 minutes after 5, 19 before 6. Hope you're having a nice Tuesday afternoon. Thanks for joining me. This is Charlottesville Right Now, News Radio 1070 WINA. I'm Coy Barefoot, and it's 62 degrees here in Central Virginia. We're talking with Brian Wheeler, the executive director of Charlottesville Tomorrow. Brian, we were talking during the break about the revenue sharing agreement. It still blows my mind that the county is giving now what's going to be $18 million a year?
A year. Annually.
County taxpayer money that goes to the city. Now, we understand the idea. A lot of people in the county work in the city. You take advantage of the all the things that the city offers that they have to pay for that the county, you know, doesn't. Well, I guess we do.
Well, that wasn't the original idea behind it.
Well, yeah, the idea had to do with expansion, right?
It had to do with stopping annexation.
Yeah.
So this was a deal where the county agreed to pay to stop the city from annexing county land.
Right.
Especially up towards Fashion Square.
Right, because the county was developing commercially some of that land, and they didn't want the city, you know, to spend all this effort and staff time to develop this land, and then the city come in and just take it and get all the, you know, the sales taxes and all that stuff from those businesses.
And then shortly after that deal was struck between the city and the county, the deal, by the way, does not have an expiration date and can only be renegotiated with the mutual consent of both parties. Unless there's something extreme like the city decides not to be a city anymore and become a town within Albemarle, which we don't expect would happen. So basically, it's an agreement in perpetuity, unless both parties agree to get out of it. And then a year later or two, the General Assembly said they put a moratorium on annexation. So the deal was not needed a couple years later. Now, that moratorium could end. You know, any given General Assembly session, they could revisit that.
Yeah.
I don't think people expect that to happen.
No.
Folks in the city say, you know what, we deserve this money because we would have had that land and we would have been benefiting from the revenue and taxes on that property had we gotten our hands on it. The folks in the county say, you know what, we need to make sure that these funds are channeled towards things that are mutually beneficial to both localities.
Is that happening?
It comes in, no strings attached. So it just goes into the city's general fund, and they can do with it whatever they want.
Man, no wonder they're rolling in cash.
The real problem for the County of Albemarle, in my opinion, given that it's stuck with this agreement, is that the composite index, the formula that the state uses to figure out how much money we get from the state, does not take this into account. So the budget from Richmond...
Oh. That's awful.
The budget from Richmond thinks we have that $18 million.
When we don't.
So that ability to pay, they think our ability is even greater than it is.
Which means we get less money. So taxpayers in Albemarle County are directly subsidizing the city of Charlottesville budget. And we are also subsidizing the rest of folks in Virginia because our money's going to Richmond and it ain't coming back.
Yes. So,
man, where's my pitchfork?
That's one of the challenges.
I'm going to storm the castle.
But, you know,
this is crazy.
And a lot of people say, and I'm sure some of these new officials who have been elected will ask some of those questions when they get on the board. They will say, what can we do about revenue sharing? Larry Davis, the county attorney, will say, you can't do anything about revenue sharing. We're stuck with this. So that's the way it is. You know, we have to learn. We're
crazy,
stuck with
though.
It.
Who in the county struck that deal? I mean, if we could go back in time.
Well,
that is crazy.
There was a referendum. The people of Albemarle struck that deal.
They agreed.
Yes.
Because they were so afraid the city was going to annex 29 North.
Right. And, you know, hindsight's 20/20. If you could do it over, would you put a time duration on it? Yeah, maybe. Would you say that if the General Assembly outlaws annexation, you know, this is null and void? Maybe that'd be a good thing.
Wow.
But those parts of the agreement are not there. So I know it's frustrating to a lot of people who listen to this program and who follow these issues closely, but everyone who's looked at this says there is no easy way out of this agreement. Now, could the county stop paying? Sure. But then they'd face a lawsuit, and that would really, put a downer on the city-county cooperation.
Remember back in the mid-90s when there was all that talk about reversion?
Yeah.
And the city was going to become a town?
Right.
That just went away.
And then all of the things that the city currently does for its citizens would become the responsibility of Albemarle County. And, you know, that I don't expect that will happen either. But that is another path that you could go down that would end the agreement.
Yeah. Oh,
so
man.
Anyway, revenue sharing is a big thorny thing.
Whew.
Speaking of big thorny things, we talked about this. Now, I have to be careful how I say this because it always sounds like art in place. But we're not talking about art in place.
Which has its detractors and its fans.
We're not talking about the stuff on the side of the road. We're talking about Arden Place.
A-R-D-E-N.
which is a development off of Rio Road down Putt-Putt Lane. You know where the Putt-Putt is?
Of course I do.
Of course you do.
Yeah.
Go down that
By the old Bonanza, which is now Rivals.
Which is now Rivals. And so that whole tract of land behind Rivals is where the Arden Place luxury condominiums are going to go. That's been approved. And it's up to 212 housing units.
Wow, it's huge.
And that backs up to the Woodbrook neighborhood, which you access across from Lowe's.
All that stuff behind the Circuit City.
Now, an interesting thing I
learned... Or what used to be the Circuit City.
An interesting thing about Woodbrook, I learned, is that it had connections that were contemplated when that subdivision was built to connect it both to Carsbrook to the north, but also to whatever came next to the south. So... On you know, people's property, you can see a little road stubbing out, you know, into the woods. And those were intended to be future connections.
Ooh.
Now, every time in my observations of the county where there's been a new development coming in next to an old development, especially one that's been there quite a while, even if there was some idea that things would be interconnected, the people in that neighborhood never want to be interconnected to anything.
Yeah, of course.
So the place where
They like their cul-de-sacs.
Mill Creek South does not want to be connected to Biscuit Run, even though Biscuit Run may have the school that their kids will go to, right? North Point, development up north of Airport Road. There's a little road called Pritchett Lane, which is runs parallel to 29 North.
Uh-huh.
People on Pritchett Lane don't want to be connected to North Point, even though that's where their grocery store might be. So Arden Place. Arden Place near Woodbrook, the folks in Woodbrook came to two public hearings in the Planning Commission and said, we do not want to be connected to that. Initially, the county staff were trying to encourage a road connection between Arden Place and Woodbrook. And the folks in Woodbrook said, we definitely don't want a road connection. And then the developer said, okay, well, how about a path? We could just put a trail there. Will that make the county happy, and will that make Woodbrook happy? And Woodbrook said, no, we don't want a path.
Woodbrook.
And interestingly, the Arden Place development has to figure out how to get in and out of its development from two different places. So the second place they're going to allow for egress and what's the opposite of egress?
Outgress?
Outgress? Whatever it
Ingress?
Is. Ingress? Ingress and egress. That's it.
Yeah.
I was lost in space there for a minute. They're going to go through the Carmike Theater.
That's crazy.
The parking lot there. Remember we talked
and then
about
just,
that?
And just come out at the Pier 1?
Yeah.
For the entrance and ingress and egress of a neighborhood?
Yeah, except it's going to be gated, so you can't just cut through like to get over to Rio.
So this is going to be a gated community.
Not a gated community, but that specific entrance will be gated. So you have to live there to use it. Is what they said. Anyway, so once they put in that road connection, the developer said, okay, we'll just run a path from Rio Road, basically, you know, to that little road connecting to the Carmike Theater. And Woodbrook said, great, as long as it doesn't come near us, we're fine with that. All right, so last week, in front of the Board of Supervisors.
But the kids who live in Arden Place are going to go to the school over in the Woodbrook neighborhood, right?
They will, Coy.
So how do they get there if they won't even give them a path?
Well, that's a problem. That is the problem. And that's what the Board of Supervisors said last week. They said, you know what? They should have a path.
The kids should be able to walk to their school, for goodness sakes.
They should have a path to walk to school.
Yeah.
That was one of the points brought up by Sally Thomas, supervisor in the Samuel Miller District, and one of the reasons she voted for this. Now, David Slutsky, this was not expected to be a controversial discussion because all that was in front of them was accepting some green space from the developer. And the developer said, here, I'm here. My development's already been approved by the Planning Commission. You guys don't have to worry about that. All I'm trying to do is get you to accept my green space and my trail that the neighborhood likes because it doesn't connect to them.
Yeah.
And the Board of Supervisors said, you know what? That trail's in the wrong place. It needs to go to Woodbrook.
It needs to go to the school.
And it also needs to be more than 5 feet wide. It needs to be 8 feet wide.
Yeah, yeah.
Because if you want to have a stroller and a bike passing on at the same time.
I mean, it just makes sense that the folks in Woodbrook are going to have to compromise on this, right?
Well, they're not too happy about it, Coy. You can read some very...
it won't be a road, but there's got to be a path for the kids to go to school.
If you go to SevilleTomorrow.org, you can read some heated discussion between neighbors in Woodbrook on this very post. There's a divide in the community, but I would say the vast number of people who came to the public hearing were opposed to this. David Slutsky said...
Opposed to even a path.
Opposed to even a path.
For the kids to get to school.
Right. They didn't frame it that way, of course, Coy. But they David Slutsky said,
because that's
know,
who's going to be using the path, right? The people who live in Arden Place aren't going to say, hey, let's go over to walk around Woodbrook, look at those homes. It's going to be the kids going to school.
Well, Dennis Rooker said, you know what? They'd be able to walk straight to the movie theater. You know, they could walk right out of their neighborhood straight, more directly to the movie theater.
Yeah.
They could walk more directly to ACAC. So the traffic could go both ways.
Yeah.
People going to the school, but also people in Woodbrook coming out to shop and do things, right?
Yeah.
So anyway,
what's going to happen to that field that's next to Rivals? Is that going to be developed, or is that going to...
That will be developed. That's going
to
be...
So the homes are going to come right up to Riot.
I don't... The homes don't come that far, but that other space is going to be commercial development.
Oh, that so side. It's... You'll... Is that going to be an entrance there?
Eventually, yes. They're Well, I take that back. I can't remember if they got permission to do that. I want to say VDOT had some concern about that. So what there may end up being is a traffic light at the Putt-Putt Lane, and that may be the main... egress and ingress.
Yeah. Interesting.
Anyway, but I got to say, David Slutsky was opposed to this path.
To the school.
Being extended to Woodbrook because he said, you know, hey, I don't think we should do this without them knowing about it because the neighborhood was not there because they didn't think this was going to be a big deal. So David said...
I would agree with that.
David and...
Bring him in and let him know what you're thinking.
That's what David Slutsky said. He and Ken Boyd made a motion to not do the path, but do the green space. And that failed 2-4. And so then the next vote was, okay, we'll do it all. And that passed.
Yeah.
So
I just don't see how you build a new neighborhood where one would assume there's going to be kids and tell them you can't walk to your school. How would they literally get to the school?
It's, you know.
If the people in Woodbrook are standing there at their property line saying you can't walk through here. And their kids are walking all over their neighborhood to the school.
You know, Coy, I'm trying to put myself in their shoes, and for those residents who have lived there a long time and just had woods and privacy behind them,
say goodbye.
This is a whole different ballgame.
And this is the we're going to have to get used to this in the county because of these elections. Who we put on the board? This is going to be a pro-growth board, and we're going to see a lot more of this kind of thing.
But the question is, will we get growth? That I mean, one of the elements of the county's comprehensive plan is the neighborhood model. The neighborhood model promotes interconnected neighborhoods, so that you could drive from Arden Place to the shopping center at Albemarle Square without getting out on 29 in Rio.
Yeah,
you could drive to the Woodbrook Elementary School without getting on Rio and Route 29. But those interconnections, every single time they come up in this community, are fought by the neighbors that are already there. And it's a challenge.
Yeah, indeed it is. And it's not about to go away anytime soon.
It's not.
Brian Wheeler is the executive director of Charlottesville Tomorrow. You can learn more online at SeavilleTomorrow.org. Thank you, Brian.
Thank you, Coy.
Talk to you next week. And you folks sit tight. And enjoy. We got CBS News coming up, local news, a weather update, and best seat in the house. It's coming up in just a few minutes. Have a great night.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SeavillePodcast.com for more.